Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Well, hi again, everyone. Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, and hi to all of our watchers on YouTube. I'm Ryan Berlin, head economist and vice president of intelligence. Sitting across from me over here is Mr. Brian Wise, Rennie's market intelligence manager and our lead analyst on Intel.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I don't know.
I know. That's, yeah. I mean, my inclination when people say, how are you, is to say I'm good. And I am good. Like, I'm good. Things are good.
Okay.
But I'm like, I'm feeling taxed, right? I'm feeling taxed.
Yeah.
It's, so 5 years, we're just over 5 years now from the beginning of COVID-19.
Yep.
And we are now dealing with idiocy 25, pandemic.
Okay, so that's the new name that we're going to go with, idiocy 25.
It is, yes, it's a pandemic of stupidity.
Okay.
And it has to do with the tariffs primarily.
Yes.
So just a few notes on that. So right now, obviously the United States, as of this recording, I mean, again, you know,
as of right now,
timestamp this, the US is taxing imports from islands that only have penguins and have no humans.
Mm-hmm.
They are taxing imports from countries with whom the US has a trade surplus.
Yes.
They are taxing imports from a poor country like Lesotho.
Yes.
At a 50% tariff rate because the US imports $230 million of goods from them. They only buy $7 million from the US. So that little tiny poor country of Lesotho must be ripping off the US. And something has to be done about it. What is the US actually buying from Lesotho?
Diamonds.
They're buying diamonds.
So now I guess US farmers will have to start growing diamonds.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, this is one of the reasons that you trade, right? You don't have everything within your country's borders. I don't know why we have to talk about this, but the US wants diamonds and Lesotho has diamonds. So they buy diamonds and Lesotho says, hey, we're not rich enough to buy, you know, the finished manufactured products that you sell, America. And honestly, that relationship should work really, really well for the US. Anyway, as Bill Withers would say, it's just the two of us, Rye, no guests today, because we have a special edition of this podcast that we do every 6 months, where we will share some key insights from the latest edition, the spring 2025 edition of the Rennie Landscape. So I know previous listeners will know what the landscape is, and some of our listeners are landscape readers. For everyone else, why don't you just sort of share what it's about?
Yeah. So the Rennie Landscape, we do it twice a year, spring and fall. I would call it our signature publication. So most of what we do and most of what people who analyze and talk about housing markets do is report on the metrics of the housing market. They talk, you know, we talk about sales, listings, prices, how things are changing. That's so much of what we report on day to day, week to week, month to month. But the landscape is really about why things are happening in the housing market. So instead of the what, sales, transactions, things like that, it's why. Why are things behaving the way they are in the housing market? What's happening in the economy? What's happening with interest rates, demographics, credit and debt, all these other big macro factors that play into the dynamics of a local housing market.
Great. Yeah. And yeah, I guess it's been 6 years now that we've been producing this pretty much every 6 months outside of that first year when we did it every quarter, which we will never do again. And so this time around, the landscape was written against this backdrop of, I mean, quite elevated economic uncertainty, uncertainty that kind of has reemerged as, you know, after things had calmed down after sort of the wake of the pandemic hitting us. So that is understandably one of the key themes of this landscape, along with a couple of others that include Canada being at somewhat of a demographic tipping point, if you will, an inflection point. And also another theme being that housing markets here in Metro Vancouver, Victoria, Kelowna, and across the country are undergoing some changes. And some of them are structural and physical in the sense of, you know, looking at the pace of construction and how that's changing is that there have been some shifts there. But also we're seeing, sort of tying into that, that first theme of uncertainty, we're seeing markets respond, the resale market in particular, and pre-sale, which we won't talk too much about on this episode. I think we'll wait till the next one we have the Q1 data. But we're seeing the transactional, I guess, real estate markets impacted as well.
Yeah.
So let's jump in and just talk about these themes, and then maybe you can share some insights from the landscape, sort of summarize them for folks. On the topic of economic uncertainty, what do you see as being, maybe this is a real softball question here, right? What is that most critical factor that's contributing to the uncertainty? And it's tariffs. It's also sort of the haphazard approach to implementing the tariffs, I think, that's really creating a lot of the uncertainty. I just answered my own question there.
Yeah, well, and I would go a step further and say, you know, we saw market response before any tariffs were actually implemented. So if we just talk about, you know, our local housing markets across Canada, sales counts were picking up to varying degrees in Vancouver, Victoria, Kelowna, eastern markets too, Toronto, Montreal. Everything was starting to pick up a little bit. And so here in Vancouver, we saw for four consecutive months from October through January, year over year sales increases. So we weren't sort of busy or back to average or anything. But then, you know, basically on February 1st, when tariffs weren't implemented, but there was this looming March 4th deadline, we saw buying activity really pull back and sales really slow down February, now again in March. And it's the, again, the uncertainty, all of the chaos that comes with the current US administration, where they're threatening Canada and Mexico and China and the EU and all these other countries and uninhabited islands and everything in between. People are just taking a step back and waiting because they don't know what, you know, 2 p.m. is going to look like, let alone tomorrow or next month or 5 years from now when you have to renew a mortgage.
For sure. And I think the conduit through which they're impacting the mindset of, I think, people and businesses is, I mean, there are a couple of them. One of them is, you know, there's concerns about interest rates, obviously, right? So interest rates have been coming down from, you know, generational highs. And still not, let me talk about it in a minute, the Bank of Canada still not, hasn't brought its rate down to what we would consider to be the terminal rate, sort of where it will stop cutting, currently at 2.75. And we, up until this point, seen the terminal rate as 2.5. So getting there, bond yields had come down, economic activity had picked up, and mortgage rates, fixed mortgage rates had come down. So the wheels like started to be, they were starting to be greased a little bit more, to your point. Last year ended better than the year started. There was some momentum there. So now there's this concern that tariffs and retaliatory tariffs from Canada against the US could lead to more inflation, which in turn may lead to an uptick in interest rates. The other part of it this time around, which is different from during the pandemic, when it was kind of inflation and interest rates were the main focus, there's now a pure economic threat to jobs and economic activity. So I think for households, they're looking and saying, okay, well, how much is a mortgage going to cost me if I'm going to buy or if I'm going to renew? But beyond that, it's like, do I feel secure in my job?
Yeah. So the Bank of Canada just put out a good survey data on this. So asking consumers a whole bunch of questions, one of which was, are you concerned about losing your job, or are you more concerned about losing your job than you were a few months ago? And those who work in, you know, the auto sector, forestry, et cetera, those sectors that are really vulnerable to tariffs, those respondents answered at a much higher rate that, yeah, they're worried about losing their job. So those are the type of people who maybe don't want to make a big financial decision right now.
Yeah, and understandably so. So you talked about the economy starting to, the housing market starting to respond to the looming threat of tariffs even before anything had been implemented. I don't know if you want to talk more broadly about the labor market in Canada, which, you know, we've talked about the direction and magnitude of changes in the past, but I know the landscape goes into a bit more detail on that front. So, you know, how is the labor market evolving? And then alongside of that, what do we see the Bank of Canada sort of responding to in what way?
The labor market's really, it's been this like slow and steady deterioration over about a 2 year period. So in summer of 2022, our unemployment rate hit an all time low. And since then we've been just seeing the slow and steady uptick month after month of a rising unemployment rate. Part of that is, you know, the weight of high interest rates sort of slowly having more of an effect of reducing demand in the economy. Part of that is the demographic side of record-setting population growth, adding, you know, to our labor force faster than we can maybe accommodate. And so we've seen is this atypical period where the unemployment rate has risen for basically two consecutive years without a major shock preceding it, like you would typically see in this type of environment. So I think going back to 1980, there's been sort of seven periods like this, and all seven of them were, you know, recessions, dot-com crash, great financial crisis, COVID, some of the challenges of the early 90s. And so this is like a unique period from a perspective of the Canadian labor market.
Indeed. Yeah. And it's sort of, it's happened sort of under our noses here. Like, I don't know if everyone's been paying attention to it. I think the unemployment right now is at a point where we are taking notice. It's close to 7%. And certainly as a starting point going into a what could be a protracted trade war with the US, that's something to watch. And that's something the Bank of Canada will watch. So, you know, with the unemployment rate having been rising for, it's been almost 3 years, you know, how might the Bank of Canada respond to that with the, you know, obviously added complication of tariffs? Or are they looking at things in a different way?
Yeah. And this is where we go back to the Bank of Canada's sole mandate, which is inflation. You know, in the States, the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate of inflation and jobs. In Canada, we don't. It's all about inflation. I think that is important for people to remember. And Tiff Macklem, the governor of the Bank of Canada, has been quite outspoken lately about this idea that monetary policy is this like big blunt instrument that is not best suited to relief and is much better suited to keeping inflation in check. And so he's sort of saying, look to the federal government for sectoral relief for workers, for businesses who are adversely impacted by this. These new import taxes. Well, so I think, you know, we shouldn't expect too much from the Bank of Canada here in terms of a lowered policy rate, and instead look for them to be more targeted in their approach.
Yeah, I think that's good perspective to share.
Hi, I'm Cassidy Bast, Director of Advisor Growth and Career Development of Rennie. Do you like what you're hearing? Are you ready to grow your real estate career? At Rennie, we invest in people. With a trusted brand, powerful market intel, and a full-service brokerage, we provide the tools and insights you need to expand and thrive in your business. Visit joinus.rennie.com and let's talk about how Rennie can elevate your business.
Maybe final topic on the broader topic of uncertainty, maybe complicating our ability to forecast forward what our world's going to look like, is the fact that amongst, you know, all of this economic and trade driven uncertainty, we have political uncertainty in Canada because we don't know who our federal governing party will be on April 28th at this point. It looks like it's going to be the Liberals right now, but in a week it could be the Conservatives.
Yeah, there's a bit of a upswing in the polls lately. So
yeah,
I think like a 29-point swing over the last couple months.
Yeah, I mean it's unprecedented. I believe, I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this over such a short period of time. I think on December 31st, if these numbers, I think they're correct, the Conservatives had a just in general polling had a 24-point lead on the Liberals, and now the Liberals have a 7-point lead nationally.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so there's a lot of uncertainty there. Briefly, what implications might a conservative, let's just say majority versus a Liberal majority have for housing?
I think the first thing, we get some more clarity. Before all of this tariff uncertainty, we had, you know, a finance minister resign very publicly. We had a lot of turmoil in our own house before, you know, all the focus went to the US. So I think regardless of who wins, we get some more clarity. We've seen some of the housing platforms get announced. So we know that the Liberals want to do no GST on new homes for first-time buyers up to $1 million. Mm-hmm. The Conservatives want to do no GST on new homes up to $1.3 million. I think generally, you know, housing is a necessity. I'd be in favor of no GST on new homes. But I would also want to see that, whatever that limit is, be indexed to either Absolutely. Inflation or, you know, benchmark prices, so that, you know, 10 years from now, those numbers are still relevant. We've seen that the Liberal Party wants to create Build Canada Homes, I believe it's called, and they want to get involved, use a Crown Corp to actually build hundreds of thousands of new homes per year, which is probably not possible given labor constraints, given that—
I think you're right.
inputs are now going to be more expensive.
And needless to say, too, that unfortunately, they would then be competing with the private sector, who is also yes. trying to deliver yeah. homes.
But they also want to do, they want to bring up the MURB, the multi-unit residential buildings, which is a tax incentive from the 1970s that was helpful in getting yeah. Rental housing built back in the 70s. And it was essentially a tax incentive where developers and owners could write off costs. So I think that's an interesting one. And then they want to reduce DCCs, development cost charges, and some of the details on that are still to be worked out.
It's very interesting. So obviously it's, yeah, without knowing who's going to win, it's hard to know how these things will play out mm-hmm. And what the timing will look like with some of these things. But just sort of sticking on the topic of federal government policy and segueing into our second theme that we wanted to touch on here from the landscape, is that Canada is undergoing currently a pretty big shift in its demographic composition and the size of the population. And a lot of that is driven, most of it is driven by what we expect to be this year and next year, a decline in the non-permanent resident population. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah.
In general terms, what that might mean for the housing market here in Metro Vancouver.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that.
Good. So, I'm glad.
So immigration policy in Canada has always been focused on immigrants, permanent resident additions. So since 2015, we've set permanent resident targets every year, and they've generally been increasing. And they set them sort of 3 years ahead, and they update them every year. And so this year was supposed to be 500,000 permanent residents. But as we've talked a lot about, we had population growth in excess of 1 million. And we've added mm-hmm. like 3 million people over the last 3 years, which is the equivalent to Metro Vancouver's population in 3 years nationally. And the reason for that, as we've touched on a ton on this podcast, is non-permanent residents. So temporary foreign workers, international students, asylum seekers, and that population there's been no explicit target set to it, and it's grown at a rate like we've never seen before. And that's really been the big change in how we've sort of, our population growth has accelerated so much over the last few years, and now it becomes a part of the new immigration targets. And so the main goal, the focus here, is to reduce the share of non-permanent residents mm-hmm. from just over 7% at the end of last year to 5% of the population.
By the end of
2026.
So that's fast, yeah. Like 2 years.
And the way to do it, it'll be a few things. So some of those people will convert to permanent residents. Some will have their permits expire, and then they will issue fewer new permits. And so they expect a decrease in the non-permanent resident population of like 450,000 in each of the next 2 years. But that was also based on having less population growth last year than we ultimately have. So we probably need to see more temporary residents leave than is in the original plan in order to hit those targets, assuming all else being equal.
Yeah, right. And yeah, assuming the will persists over the next couple of years to actually drive down to that target. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I mean, that is an aggressive change. Obviously there was a very quick and substantial run up in population. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, a slower tapering off would be a little bit easier to manage for, when I think about particularly the post-secondary mm-hmm. Education institutions here. But yeah, that's a huge shift. And then that obviously is going to have implications for housing.
Yes. At the regional level or the provincial level, it's not just international migration that matters for population growth. It's also domestic migration and births and deaths. Although in Canada, we don't have a lot of births. So that ends up being sort of not much of an impact. Yeah. If domestic migration at the regional level continues as it has, we'll get population decline in Metro Vancouver. So unless we see a big influx of people moving here from other parts of BC and other parts of Canada, that outflow of non-permanent residents in Metro Vancouver will lead to population decline, because non-permanent residents, they overwhelmingly flock to Canada's largest cities. And so Metro Vancouver has a disproportionately high share of non-permanent residents living here today. And so what that means essentially is that we would expect population decline unless a whole bunch of domestic movers come here, and that probably won't happen. And so I think we can reasonably mm-hmm. expect population decline in this region this year and next year.
Yeah, currently our models are forecasting a 15 to 20,000 person decline this year and next. Again, that's not if we don't see a major change, to your point, in those domestic flows. We know that very consistently every year that more people leave Metro Vancouver for other parts of BC mm-hmm. than come to this region from elsewhere in the province. We don't specifically know the whys, but you can assume that it's largely a cost of living driven decision.
Yeah. So we could see a change with, you know, less competition in the rental market from international students and temporary right. foreign yeah. workers.
And so some people stay who otherwise would have left. We did a bit of sensitivity testing on that, and it would take not to overuse this term because I think we used it earlier, but a seismic mm-hmm. shift in those domestic flows to really come close to compensating to a large degree for the overall outflow of international residents. And then for housing, you know, we talk about migration and migrants, they are younger than the existing population here in Canada. The typical person is, maybe surprisingly to some people, 32 years old. So it's a millennial, but that's kind of that's a recent development. That millennial being the typical person in Canada has only been true for the last 3 years. For the prior 50 years, it was a baby boomer. So, and a part of that is just the run up in growth and migration that we saw over the past few years. So 32 years old, the typical immigrant is 27 years old, the typical non-permanent resident, so international students, temporary foreign worker, but dominated by international students, the profile at least, is an 18 year old. Mm-hmm. And then, so you look at life cycle patterns of housing occupancy and demand, and we know that renters primarily exist in that 20 to 44 year old group. And so it is the rental market here. And we've talked about this before mm-hmm. on this podcast. The rental market will feel the effects more than the ownership market, most likely from these shifts. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the rental market, our final theme that we wanted to touch on from the landscape is some of the trends that we're seeing within the housing market as it relates to construction and new supply.
Yeah, so what we've seen is a renewal of construction of purpose-built rentals. So in Metro Vancouver, it is. From like 1990 to about 2015, we built very few new purpose-built rentals. Almost all of the additions to the rental market came mm-hmm. in the condominium space. So since 2007, 79% of all rental additions in Metro Vancouver have come from condominiums owned by individual investors, right. not purpose-built. Purpose-built rental construction is increasing for a few reasons. There's some policies geared towards purpose-built rental that make it a little bit more favorable, and the pre-sale market has not been as active as it has in the past. So we've now increased purpose-built rental starts. So in each of the past 3 years, there's been more than 10,000 in this region, which has never happened prior to 2022.
Right. And we've got like 21,000 homes that are purpose-built rental homes that are under construction. Mm-hmm. So we should see, an increase in completions going forward from rental, a decrease in the multifamily for sale segment, because we know that the homes haven't been pre-selling. If homes don't sell in the pre-sale market, the multifamily homes, the homes in towers, then They don't get built.
Yeah. So starts peaked in this region in 2023. They declined a bit last year. Mm-hmm. And based on, you know, the number of pre-sales that we've seen, the number of building permits issued, we expect starts to continue to fall, which means, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 years from now, we'll see ownership completions fall as well.
Great. Well, that's that was an enjoyable discussion. There's obviously a lot more in the landscape to check out. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's interested in reading it, don't have to read the whole thing. You can read it piece by piece. You can go to rennie.com/intelligence for that. All right, let's transition to our next segment. Beneath the headline, Ryan, what do you have for us?
Oh, a good one. Vancouver homebuyers face one of the biggest price increases in the country.
When? Like what year?
I believe they're talking about last month.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that does not, that makes no sense to me.
So really quick, benchmark values did increase across the Lower Mainland, the combination of the Vancouver and Fraser Valley Board areas. The composite price increase was like 0.5%.
Right. Okay.
And then if you look at the different home types, all increasing by somewhere between 0.1 and 0.6%. I gather many other markets in the country did not see price increases. And so this very, very marginal month-to-month change in price was deemed the biggest price increase in the country.
So, okay. So I was too quick to sort of poo-poo it. So it's technically correct, but obviously a very narrow focus on the latest month-to-month change, which was quite small.
And if you look at it on an annual basis, prices were down like 1% year over year. So, yeah.
And I mean, I think that's a better way to evaluate how values are changing. So, I mean, even with a 0.5 percentage point increase in the benchmark price, that doesn't materially change the affordability calculation. Homes are still expensive. It is still difficult to afford a home, but obviously not much has changed versus last month.
Prices have been quite stable for a while.
And finally, we have a question from one of our listeners, Tracy in Vancouver.
With so much uncertainty in the economy and the market, how are investors thinking about real estate right now? Are they pulling back?
Why is your 2 cents?
They already have. So I think we've talked about this before, but investors have already pulled back in part because of high interest rates and some of the policy changes we saw over the last couple of years, and they really haven't re-engaged yet because of all this uncertainty. So if we look at across all Rennie projects, investors versus end users buying new homes from Rennie, in 2021, 2022, 2023, investors were around half of all buyers. Again, for that sort of pre-sale new home where investors are quite active. Last year, it was 26%. So already last year, we saw a pullback in investor activity. And through the first quarter of this year, so, you know, pretty early in the year still, investors were 7% of our buyers so far this year. So I would say they've already pulled back. It's definitely uncertainty is playing a factor, but so is, you know, all the challenges that we talked about last year.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And, you know, the hope is that we can work our way through this trade conflict sooner than later with a clear set of rules that everybody will agree to play by, including the country that negotiates them south of the border, because they also negotiated our current trade agreement a few years ago, which they are not abiding by. So the hope would be that we have more certainty on the tariff front, because otherwise, you know, as we've talked about, you know, inflation has not been a major threat in any way for over a year, and interest rates are sort of getting to a lower and more stable level that makes housing a little bit more accessible, mm-hmm. I think, for everyone, including first-time homebuyers. So we're getting to a point where rates will be, you know, if we can get some certainty around the tariffs, that will have lower, more stable interest rates, and that should create a sort of more favorable environment for investors. And I would expect them to sort of re-enter the market once that's been established. So thank you, Tracy, for your question. For everyone else, we would love to answer your real estate questions. You can email us at intel@rennie.com, or you can leave a voicemail at speakpipe.com/therenniepodcast, and we'll try to respond in our next episode. Rye, that was fun. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't, as analysts, economists, we don't necessarily have answers, but I think, you know, there's a lot of noise out there. We're trying to cut through it and distill things down to what matters. So on that point, I enjoyed today's discussion.
Same here. And I think, you know, if you're really sick of tariff discussion, there's a lot of stuff in the Rennie landscape beyond just exports and tariffs. So there's more there than that'll hopefully, you know, keep you engaged.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks, Ry.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening and watching. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for tuning into the Rennie podcast, where we share our passion for homes, housing, community, and cities. We hope that today's episode sparked the same curiosity in you that drives us every day. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And if you have a moment, we'd love for you to leave a review. It helps others discover the insights, analysis, and perspective we bring from the Rennie Intelligence Division. For the latest market updates, be sure to register at rennie.com.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at rennie.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.